The Way Out Podcast, episode 90.
They would fill me with as much as I needed or wanted, pretty much.
Absolutely.
And therefore, I always, you know, here, a line in the morning, a line in the evening, a couple lines in the afternoon, a line before class. I realized I should not ever do cocaine again.
Yeah, so you had these moments right. Of like, so then, I can't do X, Y, Z anymore.
I stopped using cocaine and then switched to meth.
Bingo.
Right, yeah. Because I can't use coke anymore, but I haven't wrecked myself on meth yet, so right. Let's do this. Right. To just, like, get over the hangover, I'm like, where's the fucking alcohol?
Bingo.
You
Boom.
Know? So it was this, I'm never going to do this in this moment again, and then, you know, several moments down the road, it was back to partying. I started shooting up coke. I started shooting up, like, before the end of 2007, and then I ended up getting laid off in February of 08, but I was already coming up with excuses why I couldn't go to work. I have food poisoning, I'm gonna be in late, blah blah blah, because I just wanted to shoot up all day. Then I go to these school functions and I'm like, I look like shit. I know I look like shit. Everyone can tell that I'm fucked up, and I hated going. And the when I stopped, I used needles, I think, one time after, like a couple days after, but I watched the kid's dad OD. And he did it in front of Blaze. Blaze was six.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And he OD'd, and his heart stopped. He went into convulsions. It was like, you know, when you see stuff on TV, people go into convulsions and they film at the mouth. This was like 50 times worse than that.
God.
Welcome. Thank you for joining us on this week's installment of The Way Out, sharing stories from people just like you who have recovered from alcoholism and other addictions. The Way Out does not speak on behalf of, nor are we affiliated with, any 12-step organization. Our purpose is to share with you, one episode at a time, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now.
The Way Out Podcast is sponsored by Transitions Daily. Would you like to join a free, anonymous, online group that offers a daily topic email with popular recovery resources accompanied by a secret Facebook group for discussion? Go to dailyaaemails.com for more information about Transitions Daily. Don't forget to share dailyaaemails.com with friends, in meetings, and with sponsees in recovery. Make sure to check out the official website of The Way Out Podcast at www.wayoutcast.com. There you will find links to our latest episodes on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and Radio FM. You can also follow The Way Out Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Help us get the message out that lifelong recovery from alcoholism and addiction is possible by giving us a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast platform. The Way Out Podcast is on right now. I'm Charlie, and I'll be your host this week for the second part of our 2-part series with my dear friend, Raven. Raven shares how her addiction and alcoholism spiral into what turn out to be untenable extents. Witnessing her then-partner overdose in front of her then 6-year-old son, and what it finally took for Raven, now 7 years sober, to find fulfilling and enduring recovery. Listen up.
So, from 17 years old, we're really, you know, skyrocketed, right?
Yeah.
And continued to be a who's who of, you know, chemical delight.
I didn't deal it because I couldn't function with the numbers. Yeah. I didn't deal it. I just used it.
Consumed
and the
it.
Thing was is that my partners at the time knew that I would consume it, so they would fill me with as much as I needed or wanted, pretty much.
Absolutely.
And therefore, I always, you know, here, a line in the morning, a line in the evening, a couple lines in the afternoon, a line before class. You know?
So did, at any point from the age of 17 to 35, were there moments of clarity where you thought to yourself, oh, fuck, this is a problem? Like, oh, God, I can't do that again, or I can't do this again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were when I, you know, did too much acid too many days in a row and was seeing really bad trips. And I was like, I probably shouldn't do this anymore.
Right.
And when I realized I had a problem with cocaine, let's see, before I got sober, but I realized I was like right around the divorce time, which was... maybe 2008-ish, nine, I don't know. And I realized I should not ever do cocaine again.
Yeah, so you had these moments of like, so then I can't do X, Y, Z anymore.
I stopped using cocaine and then switched to meth.
Bingo.
Right, yeah. Because I can't use coke anymore, but I haven't wrecked myself on meth yet, so let's do this.
Right.
And so then meth is
clearly a safer alternative.
Safer drug,
and it's interesting because back then, there wasn't as much knowledge or any sort of, you know, today there's billboards about meth.
Right.
And what it can do to you, right? There was not billboards about meth.
I didn't
10
care.
Or 15 years ago.
I didn't care.
And then we didn't even care.
I was
going through
a divorce. I was going through bankruptcy. I had just gone through
And we called it crystal back then.
Well, way back in the 90s, it was speed.
Yes, exactly. Bingo.
Way back in the 90s was, let's see, when did I have my first... Yeah, it's probably like 18 I started using speed.
Yeah.
And I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it. Actually, because it kept me awake, it kept me going, it kept me focused, it kept me, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so I would use it.
It was doing
as much
for you
as
what you could not do for yourself.
Right.
Just like alcohol did for you, just like all these other things did for you. It was the new thing that was doing for you that could not do for yourself.
I think I actually did speed, I don't know, when I was 16, some guy offered it to me. I don't know, some party, and he's like, oh, you have to take two lines, not just one. That was my first time ever doing speed, and my heart was racing, and I couldn't sleep. I was spending the night at my friend's house, and I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to die. And I didn't do it again for a long time because I didn't want to feel that way
It was a negative experience.
Yeah. And so I didn't use speed again for, you know, at least a couple years. You know, because when you get so drunk and you're puking, I'm never going to drink again.
Right, exactly.
You know?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, these declarative statements that we make, like, I'm never going to do that again, right?
Right.
And, you know, I said that so many times.
As soon as I get over the hangover, I'm like, where's the fucking alcohol?
Bingo.
You know? So it was this, I'm never going to do this in this moment again. And then, you know, several moments down the road, it was back to partying.
Absolutely.
Shit, honestly, all the drugs and all that, the shit didn't hit the fan until 2008.
What happened in 2008 that was so different than 2007 or 2006 and 2005, right? What was different? I mean,
started shooting up coke.
Okay. All right. So you got to a place where you started shooting.
Yeah.
You know, there were certain moments in my using career where it was almost like this out-of-body experience, and I was watching myself do this thing and thinking, this is fucking insanity. This is pure insanity.
You know, since you mentioned that, I was raped in college by two guys, and so disassociating was easier.
Okay. Sure.
Like,
to completely disassociate from your physical being.
It was easier to where I didn't.
So you had this sort of defense mechanism that kicked in when these horrible things were happening to you, but you were also kicking it in when you were
using. Yeah.
Wow.
So it like.
So it wasn't even like it was you.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it got real bad. I ended up getting in 2007, 2008. I don't know. There's like kind of a blurry thing there. But the beginning of 2008, I got laid off from a job I had. Not that I was fucking functional in it at all anyway, because I started shooting up like before the end of that, before the end of 2007, and then I ended up getting laid off in February of 08, but I was already coming up with excuses why I couldn't go to work, I have food poisoning, I'm going to be in late, blah, 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 because I just wanted to shoot up all day.
Yeah.
You know, and my daughter was like a year old, and I just wanted to use drugs, you know, and up for days. I mean, I remember being up for like 5 days straight at one point, which is unheard of for me.
That is
honestly like 10 hours go by and I need a fucking nap now. Right?
I know.
I've been up for 10 hours.
You talk about your nap schedule and I'm like, she's 106. Honestly.
So, you know, being up for 5 days really wrecked me. And I couldn't think. And yet I was still doing some minimal things for, like, getting my son to places or whatever. And he was young. And then I'd go to these school functions and I'm like, I look like shit. I know I look like shit. Everyone could tell that I'm fucked up. And I hated going. And when I stopped, I used needles, I think one time after, like a couple days after, but I watched, the kid's dad OD and he did it in front of Blaze. Blaze was six.
Oh God.
Yeah. And he OD'd and his heart stopped. He went into convulsions. It was like, you know, when you see stuff on TV, people go into convulsions and they film at the mouth. This was like 50 times worse than that.
I can't even imagine,
because the coke was that good that it fucking about killed us.
Almost killed him.
Yeah. Well, wow. I only put half of that fucking needle in and I was feeling it and I was like, my sister had died in 2001 from OD from heroin.
Oh my God.
And you know, here I am with needles, and you get addicted to that needle. I don't know what it is, but you get addicted to that needle and the shit that's going in your system. And so I had to bang on his chest to get his heart to start. And I was like, oh, God, no. Because what are you going to fucking do? Call the cops? You got a bunch of shit. Your kids are going to be taken away from you. I mean, all this shit's going to, you know. Like, I don't know what would have happened if he really died. I probably would have gathered the kids and called 911 after I left the house. You know, I don't know. But it didn't come to that. And I remember just pounding as hard as I could on his chest. And all of a sudden, it was like, yeah, he took a breath in because his heart had stopped and he was dying. And Blaze saw that, my kid.
I couldn't even imagine.
I
couldn't even imagine. I also went into cardiac arrest because of alcohol poisoning. And a friend had to do the same thing as what you did to your husband, your ex. And I'm just thinking about, I couldn't even fathom what it would be like to have my son watch me. Wow.
So there was I stopped using needles for like a day, and then I shot up one time after that, and I was like, this isn't fucking worth it. And I got rid of all the needles and never went back to needles after that point.
There was that hard sort of stop at that point.
Yeah,
where,
but, you know, so we went back to smoking it.
Yeah.
Come on, right. We're not going to stop.
Exactly.
Smoking it, you can't fucking have this shit happen, right? So, come on now. We got to use our drugs, right? Because we're smart.
That's the thing. Like, I can't. It's so funny because, you know.
I can't do it this way anymore.
It's like the hard liquor, right? Like, when I quit hard liquor, I was like, well,
beer.
Yeah, exactly. Now I'm going to stop drinking hard liquor. That's the problem.
Right.
Right? just drink beer, right?
Yeah. So I'll just, you know, smoke the drugs instead of shoot them.
Exactly.
And, oh, shit was real bad because we ran out. You run out of drugs.
Mm.
And I know that it was May of 08. We ran out of drugs and we fucking got
it. So they had just the withdrawal.
Well, him and I both were, and we got in physical fights.
Because of the dope sickness.
Yeah. And...
for somebody who's never been dope sick, explain that. What's that like?
Dope sick is... God, it's like having the flu, only your head hurts more.
Mm. Ugh. How long does it last?
It depends on how long you used.
Yeah.
So I was up for like 3 days using meth. This is the last time I used my, like, my end of meth story.
Mm.
I was up for like 3 or 4 days, maybe 3 days using meth. And then I was sick for like 4 or 5.
Wow.
And because the next door neighbors were meth dealers.
Right.
You know, this was after I divorced and I moved in. That's a whole other different situation. But I moved in, with a family, well, the kid's family member, and the next door neighbors of his were meth dealers.
You seem to find ways to enable that addiction, right?
I know,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I wasn't really that into meth until I moved next door,
right.
And then it was, oh, I've just spent all night at the neighbor's house, now it's time for me to wake up the kids so the boy can go to school.
Right. I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine.
Fucking stupid is what it is.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, nights were spent over there and I didn't have a baby monitor. So I don't know if, you know,
my daughter was
getting up and crying that mom wasn't there, you know? So there's all this shit that I just, it was all about me. It was all about getting high. Period.
How long did it go on after the divorce? After the OD, right? So husband ODs.
So that was
the boy sees it. Your oldest son sees that. Is that what?
I think that was in May.
Okay.
With the OD, and then shortly after we ran out, and then it was all this shit. I moved out in August of 08.
Okay.
So then I moved out, and it was with the kid's uncle that I moved in. To his house, because I flat out called him. I'm like, shit's going bad with your brother. I need a place to go for a couple months. Only a couple months turned into a couple years.
Right.
And I used with the next door neighbors for probably, I want to say like 6 to 8 months after I moved in.
Mm.
So I used there for a while, and then it just got to the point I was like, I'm fucking done. I'm done. And I was sick, and I was like, no, I'm done. I don't know. I don't know how I stopped, really, because I didn't want to do it anymore, and I wasn't really praying.
Mm-hmm.
I was still able to talk to my spirit guides and everything, but I didn't make, like, a conscious effort in the sense, I'm like, I can't go over there anymore. That's what I thought. I can't go over there anymore. And God heard that wish, because after that, I didn't go over there anymore and I stopped. I was still smoking weed and still, when I stopped, okay, here's the thing. When I stopped using meth, my alcohol increased to where I was blacking out and didn't know. And that's
that trading addictions, right? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
So
it's like whack-a-mole, right?
Whack-a-mole.
You know?
And this addiction's coming up, smack it down, ding, ding. And this addiction's coming up, smack it down,
like
ding,
that.
Ding.
Oh, fuck, there's another one. Oh, fuck, there's another one. Fuck. I need another hammer. I need more hands.
Yeah. And then they all come up at once.
It's like, oh, fuck!
And they all puke all
I surrender.
Place. Yeah. So, it was the weed and the alcohol that had my hands were full. And
like your first loves, really. right?
Right. That was, you know, I smoked weed and had sex on the same day.
Yeah.
For the first time. For both.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, this is what smoking weed and this is sex. This is not very fun at all. This is stupid. This is what people get all like. This is lame.
I think it's better for the boy the first time. I'm going to be real honest with you on that one.
Yeah.
Because it was great for me the first time. I'm convinced it wasn't for her.
Right.
Convinced.
Yeah.
Right.
And yeah, I was like, this is okay, so
I'm sure she had a similar experience. She was nice enough not to say that.
I did say I think that's why you broke up with me.
There's that honesty again that
I'm like, you know. This is it. Okay.
Wow. Oh. Yeah. Ooh, hard to walk that back. Eve.
Sorry, I didn't mean it like that. Yes, I did.
Yes, I did.
I'm sorry, I can't lie. You suck.
Whoa.
It was not fun for me. having my hands full, and the thing was is that I get drunk. I ended up meeting somebody who I didn't know was sober. And I started.
You totally wouldn't have been hanging out with him if you knew he was sober.
Totally, because I was wasted. The thing was, is that I would drunk dial him.
That's awesome. Yeah,
I would drunk dial people a lot, which is better than drunk driving for sure. But sometimes, you know, you don't remember what you said. You don't know that you talked to this person until 4 a.m. Mm-hmm. Because you were wasted and didn't care. And I ended up starting my business in 2009. And obviously in 2009, I was still using and drinking and all that. And so I ended up meeting this guy who is sober that kind of showed me there's like these really cool books on water. And so he brought me some books back. So I was working at this expo. And so the next day he brought me these books and I was like, wow, dude, this is amazing. That's awesome. Dude, the guy's been sober since friggin' the 90s, right? And yeah. I didn't know this at all because he seems crazy anyway.
Right.
And you would think he was on something if you didn't know he wasn't.
Yeah.
And, you know, he just kind of operates on a whole different plane and sometimes different dimension and sometimes different millennia. But I ended up telling him because it was New Year's Eve and the end of 2010, beginning of 2011. And I ended up calling him up a couple days after that, where I had spent the whole weekend drinking and smoking all the rest of my weed. And I was like, man, the kids are at their dad's. And that's a whole other retarded story. But anyway, I basically used all that I had in alcohol. And, you know, Minnesota didn't sell alcohol on Sundays. So here
they
I was.
They do now.
Yeah, I know. Yay. Yeah. Fuck them. So here I was, and I call him up, and I was, like, kind of down. I ended up, you know, because alcohol decreases your immune system.
Sure.
So then you get sick. And so I was like, yeah, I drank and I smoked, and then I got sick. Well, I think he understood that to mean I had a really bad hangover. Like I got sick from the alcohol instead of I just got like a cold.
Right.
And then he mentions to me, there's a really great NA meeting this Friday. He told me that on a Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And I put everything down that day, on that Tuesday.
Mm.
I don't know why.
Hmm. This week's Recovery Revealed segment is brought to you by All Recovery Rings and AllRecoveryRings.com. Would you like a medallion or coin from your favorite recovery program, hand-forged into a beautiful ring? Go to AllRecoveryRings.com and choose from over 15 stunning styles, all hand-forged by expert craftsmen.
What are you waiting for? Do like I did and get your very own recovery ring today. We'll be back in a moment with the conclusion of my interview with Raven as we take some time out for Recovery Revealed, an opportunity to examine a particular aspect of this life in recovery. Recently, a friend of mine mentioned via social media that he doesn't like the way he feels when he watches too much TV, which we here in the upper Midwest had plenty of opportunity to do during a weekend blizzard that dropped nearly 2 feet of snow within the span of 48 hours. I reflected for a moment and came to a very important realization regarding emotions, actions, consequences, and choices in recovery. Though he didn't realize it at the moment, likely, he endured an essential human phenomenon from start to finish without responding the way he would have in active addiction. Recovery bestowed upon him a wonderful gift, which likely didn't feel like one at the time. He made a choice to watch what he later learned was too much TV. That decision was followed by the action, hours of mind-numbing TV. The decision, which turned into the corresponding action, produced an unpleasant emotional state, unpleasant enough to garner his attention. His body and mind were actively communicating, "Hey, I don't like too much laying around and melting into the Netflix." Because he's now in recovery and has tools to navigate through unpleasant feelings without having to use drugs or alcohol, he allowed himself to feel the full consequence, in this case, an undesirable emotional state of his choices and actions. We're going to make choices and act on desires that result in feelings we don't like in recovery. Because we're no longer medicating and anesthetizing our feelings and emotions, we're also going to endure the entire impact of those choices, which in large part is the consequence to our behaviors, assuming they're within the confines of the law. Decisions we make and the behaviors that follow result in consequences, often but not limited to a corresponding emotion or set of emotions. Sometimes others may be a part of this equation, where we may cause undue harm, which may then allow an opportunity to practice a good step 10. Your mind, body, and spirit are telling you that the choice and actions that followed produced an unsavory physiological and emotional state, and to pay attention and adjust future choices and behaviors accordingly. Prior to recovery, I know I personally short-circuited that process and bailed out of the unsavory emotions, which didn't allow me an opportunity for lack of a better way to phrase it, to learn my lesson. Recovery is giving the essential gift of taking my medicine and, God willing, adjusting future actions accordingly. Now back to the conclusion of my interview with Raven. Listen up. Don't forget, the way we get the message out to those who still suffer is to give this podcast a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast platform.
I started seeing cycles, you know, the cycles they tell you, like, you keep drinking and the same shit happens. Yeah. And the thing was, is that I had noticed that probably like the last half a dozen times I drank, and I was like, God, I want weed. And then I want something to make me like awake, and I want speed. And then I'm just going to go back to shooting fucking coke again. Yeah. I'm like, what is wrong with me? Yeah. Oh, but tomorrow that'll be different.
I think is instructive, because I hear so often that people might at least make a decision that they're either going to go to treatment or they're going to go to a meeting, and they use all of it. And they have this big sort of like, you know, one last hurrah, right? Before sort of, right? But you would reach the end, maybe. Like, you would, you would almost like before consciously knowing it, do you think?
I started seeing cycles, you know, the cycles they tell you, like, you keep drinking and the same shit happens. Yeah. And the thing was, is that I had noticed that probably, like, the last half a dozen times I drank, and I was like, God, I want weed, and then I want something to make me, like, awake, and I want speed, and then I'm just gonna go back to shooting fucking coke again. Yeah. I'm like, what is wrong with me? Yeah. Oh, but tomorrow, that'll be different.
Yep.
You know, and I was told there was some court shit that I had to go through with the kid's dad, and they were giving us hair follicle testing to see if we had any drugs in our system and blah, blah, blah. And so my lawyer was like, you need to stop smoking weed. And I think I went like five or six weeks without, and I was like, I can't fucking handle this, you know?
Not being able to sober well without any sort of solution.
Right, I was still drinking.
Right.
You know, instead of like a bottle a day, it was, you know, maybe less. Maybe like three quarters of a bottle. But I tried to stop smoking weed, and I couldn't. And then I just kept drinking, but that it was interesting because my friend Fred said, I call him Crazy Fred, but he said, I know of an NA meeting where they have a large group and they break out into smaller groups and they bring out a candle, and it's a candlelight meeting. Do you want to go? And I was like, yes. And I'm like, what the fuck did I just say? He said fucking candles, Raven. And you said yes to the candles. Oh, now I'm committed.
Because it sounded cool.
I know.
There's candles and candlelight.
Yeah.
Right. That sounds amazing. Wait, what?
Right. Now I'm committed. Okay. Well, I guess I'm going. And then I don't know what happened, but I was able to set it down that day. And I don't remember if I dumped out. I was out of weed. I don't remember if I dumped out the alcohol. I don't remember. I remember not wanting it after he after I said yes, and you know, he invited me to that meeting. I remember not wanting it, and I don't know what happened, but I stopped drinking that day, and the meeting wasn't until Friday.
After a number of years and reflecting on that, why do you think that is?
Because he gave me hope. Is what I know today. He gave me hope, and I listened to my higher power, to God at the time, without knowing I was, and I was able to empty my hands so that when I got in to recovery to my first meeting, they would be empty to be able to be filled with something else. And honestly, then this is going to sound, I think I've told you at meetings or shared at meetings, the first time I ever saw the 12 steps, I knew it was truth. When I looked at that, and when I read it, and when I saw it, and I heard it, I was like, this is what I need. I knew that was what I needed.
You intrinsically understood that as a solution for you.
And then on the other hand, I was like, ah, shit, that's a lot of work. You know, like, this is what I need. Yeah. And ah, shit, this is what I need. Right. You know, it was the flip side of the coin. But I knew that's what I needed. And
what was that like for you? So, was there a sense of relief then?
Yeah, it was relief. It was, this is already laid out. This is, it was so weird because here I'm at my first ever meeting with my friends, you know, walking into a room of strangers, you know, trying to find drugs. You didn't fucking care who you walked in because you were like, I'm invincible.
Exactly.
And I just knew, like, this was the truth I had been looking for.
Yeah.
And nothing else fit this.
Yeah.
None of this, like, self-help, alternative healing, you know, big into this and that and the other thing.
Right. Exercise or this or that or the other thing, right?
Yeah. And even the big book talks about, oh, all the self-help
it
books.
Does. It you does. Know? Totally it totally does.
Yeah, and it doesn't fill that spot. Right. Well, I want to get better, but I don't want to stop drinking.
Right. Exactly.
Damn it, I have to stop drinking?
Son of a bitch.
So that first meeting puts, my sister wrote a poem a long time ago where it was, how do you explain colors to someone who's blind? And she said, that yellow was a glint of hope in the dark. And to me, that's the color of hope. Is just that yellow.
That's cool.
Like at the end of,
that is,
you know,
really cool.
Yeah. So
what was it like then working the steps? How did that work for you?
I wanted to get through them and I wanted to do it quickly and I wanted to do it like a class because I'm, you know,
because you're right. That's you do. Yeah.
The academics. Mm-hmm. Right. Let's get through this. Yep. Let's work through this.
Yep. So the student and the scholar.
Right. Here we go. I'm in a class and I'm learning.
And you're going to master these.
No, not necessarily master was the word. It was more like, I'm going to pass. Yeah. I didn't have to get an A, but I was going to pass.
That's fair.
Pass or fail.
Totally fair. Yay.
So I started work. Well, the thing was, is that I had a healer, an acupuncturist, that was in my life before I got sober. And it was questions that he posed to me. And because I had questions, but, you know, as soon as you tell an addict or an alcoholic, oh, you need to do this. Well, it's, you know, the middle finger goes up and I'm not going to do that.
Totally.
And the rebellious side kicks in, the fighter, blah, blah. So what he said to me was, I said, I have questions. I'm like, why does everybody say, because I started out in NA, and why does everybody say, they're an addict. Mm-hmm. What the hell? They, not only do they say it in the beginning, but they say it like all throughout every time before they start speaking.
Right.
Why is that? And then he said, well, maybe you find somebody who has 20 plus years in recovery and ask them your questions.
Mm.
Because if you go to somebody who's newer, they won't have as much of a foundation in recovery as what I'm looking. Because here I am, brand new.
Right.
And I had lots of questions.
Mm-hmm.
And so I sought out a sponsor at that time without knowing it was going to be a sponsor. And that was within the first 30 days. Mm. That was probably like 2 weeks in.
Mm.
And I'm like, I have these questions. You know, can you meet with me and we can go over my questions and stuff? And then, like, a couple weeks after, and mind you, I only went to one meeting a week.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Friday night meeting, sure. I went to one meeting a week for probably the first 4 months.
Okay. Okay.
Which I don't recommend.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's putting the faucet on drip.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't recommend that. But it was trying to figure that out, the meetings with the kids and late nights, because it was the NA meetings last over an hour.
Yeah.
Sometimes 2 hours.
Right.
And plus fellowship. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to lose my fucking mind. You know?
Yeah.
Hey, 1 hour. That's
exactly.
It. Get out.
Totally.
Which,
absolutely correct.
Right. So I really put a lot of time into those Friday nights.
Yeah.
Because it would, you know, I'd have to be there, I don't know, 7:30.
Because you had to.
Yeah, I had to.
Right.
I'd be there, you know, 7:30, 8 o'clock for the meeting. And then by the time fellowship was over, we wouldn't be coming back till midnight.
Sure.
So it was a full, like, weeks worth in one day.
Right.
Oh, that was terrible. And that, it wasn't enough, but it was enough at the time, for what I needed, I guess. And so going to this meeting and having them in, so I think it was 2 weeks in, and then my healer, I was like, why does everyone say they're an addict and I'm not an addict and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, you know what? Why aren't you patient with yourself right now and don't tell yourself that you are or you aren't. Give it 30 days. You know, give
That's
it 30.
Really good advice.
Yeah. Huh. He knew what he knew what he was fucking doing. I didn't know because here I am. I mean, he's only probably like a couple years older than me in real time, but you know, in other time, he's like generations ahead.
Yeah.
You know, and he's like, why don't you give yourself 30 days and then judge if you are or aren't? Mm. I was like, okay, that sounds cool.
I love that.
You know, and
great advice.
Yeah, because he's like super fucking smart.
Oh my God. I mean, the wisdom behind that is like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, he had a master in Tai Chi, and they had a master in Tai Chi, and, you know, all this wisdom comes down. So, at the end of 30 days, I reflected on myself, and I said, oh shit, I'm an addict. And I came back to him, because I was meeting with him, like, once a week, and I came back, and I was like, dude. California coming through, dude.
Dude.
I'm fucked. I'm an addict.
Yeah, that's step one.
Right.
I'm fucked.
Honesty, I'm fucked.
Yeah, I'm fucked.
So it started to make more sense at that point.
Because you were listening to other people share their experience, strength, and hope, and you were starting to identify.
And I had good guidance going in.
Yeah.
And I had questions, and I just... It was very strange because it wasn't as, like, you talk about hitting the desperation, like the moment of desperation. Mm-hmm. I knew I needed something so different than what I was doing that when I saw it, I knew that's what I needed.
Yeah.
And I kind of went on this weird automatic pilot thing. Okay, you're going to tell me I need a sponsor? I'm going to get a sponsor. You're going to tell me work the steps? I'm going to work the steps. My sponsor says that she has a traditions meeting with their sponsees. I'm going to do that.
Yep.
I'm going to do service work. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that.
Bingo.
You know, whatever you need help with, I will do it because you're telling me what to do. And I didn't question it.
It was really well established for you in the beginning that these 12 steps looked like the solution to you.
Yeah.
And... You know, like you said, I had that gift of desperation, and I absolutely the same. Like, I'll do whatever the fuck it takes.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because I'm done. Whatever I have done in the past has gotten me here, and I don't ever, and I mean ever want to be in this place feeling this way ever again. Right?
Yeah.
That feeling, that gift of desperation is like, I don't ever, ever, ever want to be here again.
I don't.
And so I'll do whatever it takes. Can you relate to that?
Yeah. I don't think I said it.
And it sounds like you were searching for a solution before you had one.
I changed out my playground before I got in recovery.
Right. Right.
So there was shit, and it was interesting because the wrongs I had done people were eating at me.
Sure.
They were eating at me that I even apologized, like, to certain people before I got in recovery because shit wasn't right.
Right.
I knew I had to apologize to these people.
Yeah.
And I had just changed my playground and knocked a bunch of players off, you know, off the board because they were not healthy for me. And I realized... These people are not adding anything to my spiritual life without being in recovery and knowing.
So you were already at that point where you were desperately seeking
a true
solution.
Yeah.
After being mired in the
and false... wealth and opulence and then drugs and alcohol and shitty relationships and this and that and the other thing. Yeah.
All of that shit. That didn't fix you, that didn't solve anything, that didn't make you okay, right? All of that, right?
Yeah.
And you got to a place where your soul was absolutely just screaming for something different.
Yeah.
And just the hint that there could be something different out there from a friend who's in recovery, boom, was enough for you. And that's amazing.
Yeah, just the hint.
Yeah, just the hint.
And I put it down that day.
Yeah, like,
I was like, I don't know why I'm doing this.
To me, that's like the hand of God. That's the hand of God saying, okay, you're done now.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
You're done now. You don't have to do this anymore.
Yeah, it was weird. Because I didn't know how my hands were going to get empty.
Because people say, you know, the good news is you don't ever have to use again.
I don't have to have a hangover. Bingo. I don't have to be dope sick ever again.
Exactly.
I don't have to put a fucking needle in my arm ever. I don't even like I'm taking blood now.
Right.
I'm like, don't take my fucking blood. It's mine. Get your needles away.
Never have known you were an ex-junkie. Never. Never. So tell me what recovery is like. What is it like 7 years in living in recovery?
The gratitude is a lot more.
Mm.
I don't take for granted things that I used to.
Mm.
And having a sponsor who's big on gratitude and just practicing that and realizing it's not all about me.
I love what your sponsor says in terms of relying on finite self versus infinite God.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
You know, and when I hear you say that, it's such a great reminder for me that when I get out into this big bad world, I'm often relying on finite self and I don't even know it.
Right.
You know?
It comes naturally.
Yes, yes, yes. Son of a bitch.
Right.
Right? And then the other thing is petting the cat backwards, right?
Right.
You know, like
petting,
this.
Yeah.
Right? Right? Petting the cat backwards is like that in terms of recovery. So, you've got this overwhelming gratitude. You're able to share this with the people in your life now.
Yeah,
right?
It's weird.
Isn't that something, though? I mean,
I get to teach my kids about recovery without calling it recovery.
Right.
And with my daughter wanting to come to meetings because she feels good.
Right.
I mean, before I had to force them to come with me because they were too young to wash themselves. And now she wants to come with me. And the boy, you know, is the boy. He's 16-year-old, knows it all.
Yes.
But it's easier to talk to them when I had, oh, I don't remember where I was living, but I had this vision. I don't think I was done using drugs, but I had this vision that I saw him throwing away those needles. It was after my needle use. And he found the needles throughout the house because being a good junkie that I was, you know, I hid them everywhere and thinking that they would never find them here.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. And the boy would bury them, throw them in the fire pit, throw them away. And I approached him on it. And I said, I had a vision. I mean, my kids know how I talk and the things
right.
I see and feel and stuff. And so...
Right.
I said, I had this vision, buddy, that you were trying to save my life and I was trying to kill myself. And then he expanded on that a little bit more about what he did.
Wow.
And I said, you don't have to save me anymore.
Oh.
And I'm not killing myself anymore. And you don't have to save me. You don't have to play the parent role. I'm your mom and I'm learning how to play the parent role. And I'm okay now.
There's literally nothing more beautiful than that. Nothing in this world that's more beautiful than that, Raven. Nothing. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. And the smile on your face just mirrors the beauty that is so powerful. And that to me could have never happened.
Right.
Without recovery. Never. Never, never, never. And that gift that you were able to give your son, that he gets to be a kid.
Yeah.
And you get to be mom. And that he doesn't have to protect you anymore.
Right.
And he doesn't have to save you from yourself anymore.
I absolutely
inside that just absolutely 100%, Raven, that's amazing to me. Before we end, I want two things from you. A book that you would recommend the Way Out podcast audience read. And...
like a book off the top of my head?
Yeah, like spiritual, yeah.
Oh, haha! I knew one. I was like, wait, ding, ding, ding. I have children. When do I read?
Right.
It's called A Light Emerging by Barbara Eden.
A Light Brennan. Emerging by Barbara Eden.
Barbara Eden? No, hold on. Barbara Brennan. Okay. Sorry, you have to delete that.
Yeah, well, you guys can Google it.
Yeah, A Light Emerging or Emerging Light. It's on my freaking dresser at home.
You guys can Google it. You'll find it.
Yeah.
And what's the biggest piece of advice you give someone who's in early recovery?
Just breathe.
Mm. We forget to do that just sometimes. We forget to do that. We really do. Raven, it's been amazing. Thank you so much for being on the Way Out podcast. We're done.
Thank you for being a part of The Way Out, where we share stories from people just like you who have recovered from alcoholism and other addictions. If you would like to reach out to the show, you can visit us on the web at wayoutcast.com. That's wayoutcast, all one word, .com. Or drop your host a friendly email at share@wayoutcast.com. There you can also find links to previous episodes on iTunes, Stitcher, and Podcast Garden. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the podcast, contact me at share@wayoutcast.com. See you next time. And remember, if you don't change, your sobriety day will.